This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Karnason with Noel Lim and Kusu Chuang in the studio this morning on this somewhat bright and sunny morning. And even though we've changed the timing now at The Morning Run, till the end of the MCO will run from 7:30 onwards till 10 a.m. The one thing that has not changed there is that the breakfast grill still happens at 8 a.m. And today, Wong Xiao Ning will be speaking to Ramon Marimon, Professor of Economics at the European University Institute. Noel, could you tell us a little bit about that grill that's about to happen?
Although COVID-19 may have originated in China, the epicentre of the pandemic soon shifted to Europe, and we saw like Italy and Spain really suffering devastating losses because of it. I think it was a real test on their healthcare system. So the outbreak has served as an unfortunate test of the continent's public health and economic policies. And we can see that certain countries really have some really strong local issues. So Xiao Ning will be speaking to economist Ramon Marimon. He's at the He's a professor of economics at the European University Institute on how Europe is handling this crisis.
Yeah, something definitely to be paid attention to as we see how other countries deal with the pandemic and really look at our country and how we've actually done really well managing the situation. I think yesterday, in terms of infection rates, it was below the 100 mark there.
Well, let's not count our chickens before they're hatched, because if there's anything that history has taught us, there's always reinfections and the cycle of that, right? So the Spanish flu, I think that pandemic in 1917, I had two or three subsequent waves where the waves were actually larger than the first wave. So let's just be on the side of caution, as they say.
Always take it with a pinch of salt. Yeah. But it's still a significant thing to have that. But remember this, was it last week that we had days where the infection rate did spike up? And so definitely something to pay attention to.
Yes, actually, we don't have to go so far back in history. We just have to look across the causeway. Singapore, number of cases have exceeded 3,000 with 334 new infections, I think, yesterday.
Wow.
So, Singapore, I think, at one point really enjoyed a lot of praise on how they were handling the COVID-19 outbreak. And there seemed to be that bit of that complacency and no quite minimal lockdown. But now they are really having this problem and having to deal with a few clusters.
Yeah, in a related fashion as well, because that's how BFM likes to roll. 8:47, there's going to be a live call with Morningstar's analyst, Dan Romanoff. So this guy, Dan Romanoff, covers tech stocks, and he will talk to us about Zoom, which is the software a lot of people are now using to talk to each other. The stock has been going berserk. It's not 152 bucks a share. This was what 15 bucks in last year? April last year.
When it opened, it was about $40, I think.
Yeah, well, below 40, because I've got the chart in front of me, so you can't,
I can't pull
the wool over my eyes.
So yeah, I guess, is the Zoom boom overrated?
Is the Zoom boom overrated? Yeah,
that's I can't take credit for that line. I'm pretty sure I read it somewhere else. I'm not that creative. But yeah, that's definitely something we're going to be talking about.
8:47.
8:47, right. Very, very specific time. Chuang has it mapped out in his mind.
And 32 seconds.
And 32 seconds. Be sure to put that in your calendars, everyone. And of course, at 8:30, we always cover world markets. But right now, let's take a look at the newspapers. And I guess the biggest headline right now is that exams have for UPSR and PG3 have been cancelled and SPM has been postponed.
My son was celebrating yesterday because he was due for UPSR, right? And that fella is, he's the fella. I'm going to ask him on radio.
Was it just him who was celebrating? You and your wife who were celebrating?
No. We as traditional Asian Chinese Penang parents, triple whammy that right there, right?
Traditional
Asian Chinese Penang, okay? So it's like
really mouthful.
It's like, on pain or whatever, right? We like exams because exams give you a barometer of where you sit on the ladder of intellectual blah, 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 right? So it was with much disdain that we saw UPSR and PT3 being called off. And according to the Education Ministry, there will be other forms of assessment for the children going forward. I just dread to think of what kind of things this Education Ministry is going to dream up. And I don't know whether it's going to be repeated next year, because my daughter's UPSR, her turn is next year, right? So, but SPM and STPM still go on. It's just delayed.
Yeah, Paige has said that this was something they were looking for, because realistically, it's not easy for everyone to get educated online, right? Some people have access to it and some people don't. The most fair way is to defer it next year and get a better grasp on it. But that said, how do you deal with that influx? You're essentially taking care of two batches of students at the same time.
Yeah, so this is the COVID generation, right? And 10 years later, they will live to tell the tale. But something I want to add, I think something my friend put on his Facebook, he said, you know, when I was doing SPM and that period where I was, you know, doing UPSR, I was praying for exams to be delayed and deferred. And then my prayer came true like 3 decades later.
And I just can't help but recall the conversation we had, and specifically you were had with MU yesterday, University of Malaya.
Let's not go there again.
Where they're still surveying the merits of online learning. I'm like, what is going on?
In the middle of the MCO.
Yeah.
So this is a concern I have as a former student myself. Okay, so this is also a story on page 4 of the NST as well. Teachers, can students cope in 2021? I think that's a big question to ask. Even let's say you, as it is, when you came back from holidays after the November, December holidays, you had a bit of lethargy. You had to ramp up again. This is going to be a big break. And a big thing is, I mean, when I was in school, the only reason I ever paid attention to anything was because I was going to be examined on it, right?
There's
a test coming around the corner. There was a big, whether it was UPSR or PMR or SPM, there was always that big exam. And I mean, I didn't study in Form 4. I studied in Form 5 for that paper. If the kids don't have UPSR this year, are they really going to be paying attention to these assessments?
And I have to say this, it's actually quite a critical period, the 12-year-old and 11-year-old and 12-year-old, because it's quite a big jump when you get into high school in terms of the learning requirements. It gets more rigorous, right? And so at 11 and 12, if your literacy is not very high, you will really suffer throughout your high school and you're likely to drop out in Form 3 or Form 2. And this has been, I think, the Ministry of Education has shown a lot of research that has happened, if not, especially like kids, the Chinese school kids moving into government schools where they cannot cope with the Malay language. That's, you know, the transition's a problem.
Yeah, which I think is something for the parents to be cognizant of. And I guess the silver lining in this playbook here is that parents can, because by virtue of being at home with their children, they can spend a lot more time. And in my case, I think my wife does it a lot more than I do, but I take care of the other side, the soft skill side of things, yeah.
You take care of the soft skill side.
I try.
I mean, we're all changing the way we work and live.
That's right.
That is a concerning part. But I guess just like how we are all concerned about the economic ramifications of the MCO as well, you can't help but say that it was necessary to clamp things down and really to flatten the curve. And this might be necessary to make sure that not a significant portion of kids don't get left behind, and only those with access to Zoom and the internet get move forward into the next year. Is it fair? I'm not sure, but definitely something that I think needs to be done at this point. Any other things that you're paying attention to in the papers?
Yes, actually speaking on about students, so we know that the toughest schools, there are some clusters there. So the Ministry of Health has come out to say they are really going to now pay a lot of attention to test the students and teachers at the madrasa schools. So I think just looking at the numbers, right, I think there were 217 students who were tested positive out of 1,700 screening. So that's about, and they, but these 217 students, that accounts for 10% of number of COVID-19 cases in Malaysia. So, so I think that's why the Ministry of Health is really concerned about this.
Yeah, I, not to digress too much from that, but I've got a particularly nice picture here on page 16 of the NST. Superheroes making deliveries, and it's a picture of The Flash, Black Panther, Spider-Man. I don't know who this hero is, and Darth Vader, who's not really a hero, delivering groceries to people.
Ayo, another masked marauder.
Another masked marauder, yeah.
All dressed up, you know, with somewhere to go, actually.
What about you, Chong? Anything popping?
I have the Star Biz in front of me, and it shows us, it seems as if the Star is actually taking journalism to ever greater heights, because they are now questioning no less an luminary than the IMF. They are citing economists as saying that the IMF's growth forecast of 9% for Malaysia next year is way too optimistic. And this is something that we actually said yesterday on air. Not that we are economists, but we just got anecdotal and, you know, pedestrian evidence of where the economy really
is. Our pedestrian view on the matter.
And we said 9% is way too high, right? No way. So the Star has cited Alliance Bank chief economist Manokaran Motain saying that it's a different world now, different scenario. And he reckons 4 to 5%, which I think is more realistic. Like, you know what I mean? 9% in our wildest dreams, even then.
Yeah, so that's a significant, that's something to pay attention to, because I think if it's 9%, what does that mean about the low base effect, right? What did they expect for this year? Did they expect it to revise further from their 7% contraction?
Very high negative number, perhaps.
Yeah, but right now we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, we'll be talking about data from the Fed showing which sectors in the US aren't doing as well as the tensions between the US and China could be leading to a gap in leadership when it comes to COVID-19 across the world. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Kusu Chuang and Noah Lim in the studio this morning. And we've got a Twitter poll running right now. When will you travel again? An existential question for many of us out there. And the options are when infections drop a lot, which is now polling at 10%. When I get vaccinated, which is clocking in at 29%. Only Cuti Cuti Malaysia at 17.5%. And a whopping 43% saying not sure, which is very relatable. I think a lot of us aren't sure about that. Chuang and Noah, what do you think? When will you ever travel again?
1 year after the vaccine is discovered.
Yeah, no, because you haven't. You're not sure whether the vaccine really is going to work as well, right? Because there's, you know, an Asian person and a Western person, they might react to it differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being Asian, being Chinese, being from Penang.
So you're not sure, like, basically.
Triple kiasu, like, basically, right?
Yeah, so we got actually a reply to this very quickly, about 5 minutes ago, when my pay is increased by 30%, which I think is...
What?
Yes, that's the benchmark for when this person, Pipit Darhaka, will travel again, which is entertaining and also very relatable, I guess.
Actually, I saw a story online that cruise line bookings are up 40% for 2021. Can you imagine, right?
So maybe they lowered rates, right?
They would have cut rates. But then would you? I mean, knowing full well that you're basically stuck on a potentially a death ship, right?
I think it's interesting because cruise liners have had more experience dealing with this sort of thing. So they might be even more paranoid than, say, airlines per se, who have not had as much experience dealing with viruses or sickness on a plane. Because you're on a plane for maybe 12, 24 hours at the most, right? Yeah. On a cruise ship, you're there for 5 to 7 days. You have to take more precautions. And it could, at this point, it's more of a buyer's market. But looking at different sectors that are impacted by this, a new report from the US Federal Reserve confirmed that economic activity contracted sharply across all regions due to the in the US due to the COVID-19. Surprise, surprise. The central bank's Beige Book survey, which was out yesterday, said all districts reported highly uncertain outlooks among business contacts, and most are expecting conditions to worsen in the next few months.
So here are some key findings. No sector was spared from this economic blow, but the hardest hit were leisure, hospitality and retail, apart from essential services. And all districts reported widespread unemployment. Yeah, so I think businesses are cutting employment by, you know, doing layoffs and also putting people on leave, and they hope to reverse this once business activity picks up again. So I think just looking at unemployment numbers, that will push the 4-week total. I think they have about 22 million people who have filed for unemployment claims, and that's roughly 1 in 8 of the workforce in the US, and essentially wiping out all the job gains that they had achieved since the last global financial crisis.
Actually, well, somewhat ironically, I'm looking at a survey from America, from the Occupational Network, center, some one of the research centers over there, and the jobs that are most at risk in this scenario are ironically healthcare practitioners, dentists for one, physician assistants, physical therapists, registered nurses, radiologic technicians, licensed nurses, orderlies, physical therapist aides, and it's true. I mean, anecdotally, some friends of mine who do run their own health centers and basic clinics, right, have reported no walk-ins at all because nobody wants to come in. There is no, you need physical contact for physicians to do the job. But if there's a lockdown, well, how are you going to get any work? Right?
So I can, I'm not sure what's happening in Malaysia, but I know that medical graduates and medical students have been asked to volunteer at the front line. And I know in the UK, my friend, for example, because she is licensed in the UK, she's Malaysian and she was back here, they sent her an email, NHS sent her an email and said, we are renewing your license, you can come back and serve.
Wow.
So they are just taking everyone in who they can, whoever has been medically trained or work in the UK.
Yeah, my friend is actually in the UK right now, and it's tough, especially the shifts there. She's out just outside London, actually, so not as packed, but still concerns all around. And looking at more specifically the sectors that we're covering right now, According to the Commerce Department, overall sales dropped a record 8.7%. This is for retail sales from the previous month, worse than expected by some economists. And purchases at grocery stores surged by 27%. But then again, there was the drop of 27% at restaurants and bars, some of which had to shut their doors. Again, all this due to their own version of the movement control order, or most, they're more of a lockdown there. And the sales at petrol stations fell by 17%. But most of all, clothing dropped by 50%. That was the most, I think, in the survey that they recorded, which goes to show that, yes, groceries are up, but also, I mean, one has to wonder how long this grocery supply can last, especially if you count the hoarding that may have been taken place at the start, especially because this data is for the first 2 weeks of their own lockdown, because it was the second half of March.
I wonder if they had a shortage of bread.
They had a shortage of toilet paper, for sure.
Well, we saw yesterday as well, JCPenney. I don't know how many of you guys have actually been to any JCPenney's. You know, typical middle America goes there, right? And you buy most of your stuff from there. Back in the old days, well, they have discussed possibly turning to bankruptcy because business is so bad.
Yeah, but JCPenney was already one of those businesses that was structurally not great. Whereas you have people like Walmart who have been doing a lot better with the last 1 year that they adapt to e-commerce. But even then, they are going to... I mean, Walmart is hiring more people, right? And that's going to be a sector to watch. It's the discretionary items that are going to suffer a lot. I mean, clothing dropping 50%, that says a lot, especially for... I mean...
Well, since you don't have to go out and put on your office attire, you can just stay in the same crummy T-shirt for like days, right?
Not advisable. You should probably shower.
Clothing is discretionary, right?
Especially at home.
If people are fearing they will lose their jobs.
Yeah, that's right.
And moving on to manufacturing. US industrial production showed the biggest monthly decline since the end of World War II. It fell by 5.4% in March from February, and manufacturing in New York State also shrank in April at the fastest pace on record. San Francisco and Chicago feds, however, reported a moderate decrease in manufacturing. Overall, uncertainty has driven many manufacturers around the country to curb plans for future spending. Again, not unsurprising there.
Well, talk about that. I mean, talk about surveys. The Empire State Index, which is one of the most widely watched barometers. So the Empire State Index basically surveys, I think, 30 of the biggest CEOs of manufacturing operations in the New York area, right? And that is one of the most watched barometers. Well, it dropped to negative 78 yesterday. Highest in history, okay? Highest in history. I think that kind of bears mentioning as well in terms of industrial activity in that part of the world.
Yeah, I'm speechless strong at that. The Fed, also when it comes to prices, the Fed did report, Fed districts reported early slowing price growth, unchanged prices, or modest to moderate decline in prices. However, in some areas, virus-related demand did push prices higher. So again, this coming to supply and demand, we're seeing some places where maybe a bit of deflation is taking place, but wherever you have demand where it's been spurred by a shortage or virus-related, like PPEs, for example, you see the prices go up there.
Yes, of course. And but clothing, no. Discretionary item, no. The luxury brands, obviously, no. But I think I did see a news report where, you know, the Chinese are now out on the streets, right? And they are now visiting the branded stores again to, I guess, stock up on, you know, what they
I
missed
saw
out for.
Hermes booked a record $2.5 million
over a weekend.
It's crazy. So this is what they call anger buying, right?
Pent up demand.
Yeah. Revenge buying is what they call it.
Yeah. So this was something some people in retail were telling me. They said that they do expect, that even though they do expect this region to do a bit poorly, they do expect the pent-up demand to support, especially coming in from China.
Well, apparently car sales are up as well, which I find a bit incongruous, but it is what it is. Every piece of data that comes from China, you have to take it with a pinch of salt. And then you discount it back by a certain quantum.
I mean, they've been unable to buy since Chinese New Year. So a lot of that pent-up demand from there is also being held up. But
where are they driving to, though?
I mean, you buy and put your car, you take a photo, put on Instagram or whatever their version of social.
A car is not to get from point A to point B. A car is to be showed off.
That's right.
And you
that's
can show right. off that's on the gram point. Now, Chuang. You don't need to be driving
that's
that
right.
around.
And IGTV, Jermaine.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have to understand, during that lockdown period, there was a lot of promotion that was done online,
that's
right?
True.
And probably
that's
a lot
true.
Of discounts were given.
That's true.
So anyway, this data for March is bad, but it's going to be worse for April, especially because there'll be a first full month there. And the next Fed meeting for the policy setting committee is slated for the end of the month, April 28th. which is also the date of where our MCO is supposed to end. Now, talking a little bit more about the US, President Donald Trump suspended the World Health Organization's funding earlier this week, or at least their contribution to the WHO, saying that they had failed in its basic duty in its response to the coronavirus outbreak and accused the organization of being too biased towards China.
It was, right? Because in the early days, Tedros of the WHO was suspiciously complimentary of China's efforts to contain the pandemic. Why? How? Because if they, as widely believed, were late in telling the world about the virus, how can the WHO, which stands for the World Health Organization, compliment the Chinese?
And maybe this is what you call healthcare diplomacy?
I think so.
Maybe, I don't know. But, you know, even during the SARS period, the WHO was accused of being...
trigger happy.
I think they declared a pandemic. And then they were accused of being pandering to the interests of pharmaceutical companies. So it seems like they can't please anyone. But this timing of this withdrawing this funding at this time, where the world is still grappling with this outbreak, seems like a very badly timed move.
Well, it needs a uniform response, right, among all nations, especially the richest ones. So if America pulls, it's what, $500 billion?
It's the biggest contributor to
WHO. It is the biggest contributor, yeah. So yesterday I tried to go to the WHO website and to see the source of the funding, couldn't find it at all.
And that is definitely something interesting. As I'm sure you really wanted to look for
that data. Well, they do country by country breakdowns, but to have a pie chart, which is simple, right, in terms of how much each country contributes, da-da.
Interesting.
It's the ultimate geek hobby.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's how much time Chuang spends in front of the Bloomberg. But right now, we're going into a few messages. And after this will be The Breakfast Grill, where Wong Xiaoning will be speaking to Raman Mariamman, Professor of Economics at the European University Institute, about the state of pandemic in Europe and what that can be learned from there and how they're handling it, really. That's happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.